You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Here is an incredible twist to living in a hotter world. If you experienced heat stress in the womb or as a baby, your earnings could be lower 30 years later. Not possible, you say? Listen to this. Dr. Maya Rosten-Slater is a fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research and assistant professor of health and research and policy at Stanford University School of Medicine. She is co-author of a new paper, Relationship Between Season of Birth, Temperature Exposure, and Later Life Well-Being. That was just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Maya Rosten-Slater, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this study comes at global warming from a very odd angle. Who was it that wondered about the long-term impacts of heat? What is the history and the motivation of this paper?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's two strands of evidence that motivate this paper. So first is that there's this growing interest in trying to understand how factors in the very early life, including, you know, in the fetal stage, in utero stage, affect outcomes throughout the life cycle for people. And there's a growing body of evidence across disciplines. I'm an economist by training, so there's been a lot of attention to this in the economics literature, but also in epidemiology, in the medical literature, sociology, and so on, trying to understand how a variety of different environmental, health, nutrition, economic factors affecting people in the in utero period as well as at the very early life, so the first few years of life, could have these really lasting long-term consequences on later economic, health, educational outcomes. And so, you know, we were motivated to look at temperature in particular, extreme heat, in part because there's already evidence that, you know, other types of environmental factors have these long-term consequences. So, for instance, I've done some work looking at the effects of air pollution exposure in the early life period and finding that it has long-term adverse consequences for people's later outcomes. You know, people have looked at other factors like natural disasters, lead, water pollution, and so on.
Radiation, too.
Yeah, and radiation is a very big one as well. Now, maybe temperature seems kind of a milder environmental factor, perhaps. But, you know, there's already evidence from other studies, not ours, showing that exposure to extreme heat during pregnancy can lead to lower birth weight and even increased infant mortality. So there's some evidence out there that suggests that exposure to extreme heat could have adverse consequences on early life health. So then that begs the question of, well, are there long-term consequences as well, especially given what we know about the fetal period as well as the, you know, the first couple years of life being so important for impacting longer outcomes. And then I think the second motivation for this study was, you know, thinking broadly about issues related to climate change and thinking broadly about issues related to the projection that we're supposed to be experiencing more and more days with extreme temperature, in particular extreme heat, you know, by the end of the century. And most of the research about topics related to climate change, you know, tries to think about the costs and benefits associated with these projected increases, sort of in the relatively immediate term, right? So trying to understand, for instance, again, I'm an economist, so there's studies looking at how exposure to extreme temperatures affects productivity among the workforce. And so, you know, and so then that obviously has implications for GDP and per capita income and so on. We're trying to take a kind of a more nuanced but perhaps longer-term approach in trying to understand, well, yes, we know that there could be effects kind of contemporaneously, so immediately, on these economic outcomes. But is it possible that there could also be longer-term consequences operating through this almost intergenerational channel. And so that's kind of another motivation for the study, is trying to think, well, if we want to really have a good understanding of what are the costs and benefits associated with climate change, as well as policies trying to address climate change, you know, this is another factor that we should be putting into those calculations.
Okay, now in this research, how did you show there is a link between early heat and later earnings?
Yeah, so in order to be able to try to do something like that, you actually need quite a lot of data. And so we were fortunate in that we've been working with this database called the Longitudinal Employer Household Dynamic Database. So what it is, it essentially contains information on people's earnings, so quarterly level earnings data, and it's linked to information on individuals' counties and exact dates of birth. Okay, so what that enables us to do is it allows us to link to very detailed weather data that's at the daily level, so we're able to measure for any given person that's born on any given date in a particular county, what's their exposure to different temperatures during, you know, 9 months before their date of birth and, say, during the first year of life. You know, so we can calculate how many days during the 9 months before your date of birth did you have a temperature that was on average higher than, say, 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay? So we first create this linkage, and then, of course, we don't want to just be comparing people that are exposed to more hot days to other people who are exposed to fewer hot days, because, you know, there's a lot of differences between people, say, living in very hot climates in the U.S. and people living in cooler climates in the U.S., right? There's a lot of geographic differences. There's a lot of things that are unrelated completely to temperature. So in order to be able to sort of separate causation from correlation, in order to be able to hone in on the specific effect of exposure to extreme heat, what we do is the following. We compare only people born within the same county. Okay, so we're never comparing across geographic areas. We're looking at people born within the same county. And in fact, people born on the exact same day of the year, right? So as a thought experiment, you can imagine taking some county. Let's say, this is, again, just an example. Let's say we take Harris County, Texas, and we're going to compare two people, person A and person B. They're both born on the exact same day of the year. So let's say they're both born on February 5th. But they're born in different years. So one is born in 1970, and one is born in 1971. And it just so happens that there is a large heat wave in this county during 1971 and not during 1970, okay? And so what that's going to mean is that these two people that are born in the same county on the exact same day of the year, but just the different years that happen to have, where one has a heat wave and one doesn't, are going to be exposed to different numbers of high temperature days, okay? We're also, in addition to just looking at people born in the same county and on the exact same day of the year, we're also looking only at people, comparing people within race and within gender. Okay, so we're not looking sort of across race or across gender. We're looking at people of the same race and of the same gender, at least as recorded in our data, or in the exact same county and on the exact same day of the year, and comparing their exposure to different temperatures. And we're also, on top of that, you know, because we're using nearly 10 years of data or nearly 10 cohorts of individuals, we want to account for the fact that people born in 1970 just experienced different trends and economic outcomes and so on from people, say, born in 1977 overall. So we're also controlling for overall trends over this time period. So that's kind of the best that we can do with our data to try to say something, you know, very specific and precise and causal about the effect of exposure to heat. But of course, you know, We didn't run a randomized experiment where, you know, we randomly assigned some people to have a lot of hot days and other people to not have hot days. So we can never be 100% sure that this is, you know, purely causal, but we think that we're doing a pretty good job. One last thing that I'll say about this, unless you want me to say more, is that, you know, one of our findings that we think is important and interesting is that exposure to air conditioning is mitigating nearly all of the effects of exposure to extreme heat. So if you thought this was something else was going on, right, so if you thought that this wasn't about heat and this was just we're picking up some differences that are just related to heat that are about something else, then there would be no reason to think that air conditioning would play a role in it. So I think the fact that we're finding that air conditioning, which can, you know, is something that can be used to combat exposure to extreme heat, is actually mitigating our effect, is reassuring us that we are estimating something about exposure to heat.
Well, just one quick question from that. How could you possibly know how many people had air conditioning in the 1970s?
Excellent question. So actually the U.S. Census, the decennial census, has information at the county level on what fraction of households had air conditioning. So they record this information in the census years. So we don't, so I should be more careful in explaining the research design. So in our data, right, we know we have individual level data where we observe people's earnings around age 30, and then we know their date of birth and their county of birth. We don't know in our data whether that person, any given individual, had air conditioning in their home when they were born. But we know that, again, going back to that example of Harris County, Texas, we know approximately what fraction of households in Harris County, Texas, had air conditioning in 1970 as well as in 1980. Okay? And so that allows us to compare basically people who were born in counties that had high share air conditioning adoption versus people born in counties that had lower shares of air conditioning adoption and see whether the effect of temperature differs across those places.
Well, unfortunately, Maya, this study vindicates air conditioning. It appears that any woman expecting pregnancy should have AC during high heat, but if everyone everywhere gets air conditioning, then we get the power demands from fossil fuel, and that makes the outdoors hotter and hotter, makes climate change worse. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, so I completely agree with what you said. I don't think that the takeaway of our study is, you know, all pregnant women should go run into air conditioning, although perhaps you could read it that way. I think the takeaways are a little bit more nuanced and sort of you have to think about it kind of the full picture as you suggest. So with air conditioning, as you say, it's not free in any way, right? It's not free from an individual level. You have to pay to install air conditioning in your household, and of course it has all kinds of environmental costs as well. So to the extent that we're trying to do cost-benefit analyses to think about policies that try to address climate change, you know, the lot of different proposals, we have to take into account not just the direct effects of exposure to extreme heat, right? So we're offering some evidence on what's the direct effect of exposure to extreme heat in utero on long-term earnings outcomes, but also to try to understand what are the costs of any potential adaptation responses. Okay, so this is anything that people do to try to avoid exposure to any harmful effects of extreme temperatures. In our particular context, we're looking at air conditioning, which you can think about being as a costly technology that people can adopt in order to mitigate these effects. But we have to, any cost-benefit calculation has to take into account what are the costs associated with people using these technologies. And so I think that's sort of the bigger takeaway from the study. I think a related issue with regard to air conditioning is the fact that, you know, this study is based in the United States. When people look at this, they say, okay, but pretty much everybody has air conditioning these days, although, of course, not everybody. But, you know, a good share of households in the United States, especially in hotter climates, have air conditioning. So is this really that big of a deal? As you point out, you know, there's some environmental costs associated with air conditioning. But also, if we take a more global perspective, you know, countries that have some of the hottest climates in the world actually don't have that much air conditioning. So if we're thinking about global inequality, global consequences of climate change, you know, this is one mechanism by which inequality could actually grow if we think about the differences between developing and more developed countries. Hotter climate, there's a lot of research trying to link climate to development, and we're sort of honing in on one mechanism, which is this intergenerational component of having exposure in either the in utero or early childhood stage on long-term earnings, which is also correlated with productivity and labor force participation. So if we're thinking about ways to address global inequality, ways to address differing impacts of climate change across different nations in the world, understanding how these effects interact with technologies that exist, such as air conditioning, and that exist differentially across different countries, is important.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I am Alex Smith. My guest is Maya Rawson-Slater. We're talking about the impact of heat stress in the womb and on toddlers showing up in lower earnings decades later. She is a research fellow with several organizations. I guess, Maya, I could call you a kind of public health economist. Would that be accurate?
Yes, that's actually a pretty good title. I'm interested in both health economics and public economics and the intersection of those two.
Given this new study results, is it possible we could raise the standard of living simply by providing optimum conditions for pregnancy and the first year of life?
That's a big question. I've done some other work on, not just temperature, but a variety of other public interventions targeting the very early childhood period. I'm not by any means the only one that has done this work. There's now a growing body of evidence, in many ways pioneered by people like James Heckman, Nobel laureate economist in Chicago, focusing on the importance of investing in the early childhood period. So I'm definitely, my own work and the work of many others does suggest that intervening with public policies that try to, as you say, create optimal conditions, whether it's during pregnancy or in the first, let's say, 5 years of life, could have really huge returns in terms of improving outcomes of the next generation. So I'm very much sympathetic to policies that do target this period, but I also want to caution against, sort of using a one-size-fits-all approach and saying, okay, we're only going to focus on this period if we're only going to invest in this period and we're sort of going to ignore other periods of life. I think there's still a lot of evidence showing that, the other thing I'll say is that one common misunderstanding of this line of work is that it's to suggest that this means that if you sort of don't intervene in that period, you kind of missed out, and then it's like a lost cause. And I think that's a pretty terrible and depressing misunderstanding because, kids are quite resilient. There's a lot of evidence saying that. So even if you don't have optimal pregnancy conditions or if you have stress or if you have very high temperatures or if you have exposure to other kinds of negative shocks, it turns out that intervening in later life, it turns out that, supporting people as they go through schooling, supporting their health through access to health insurance throughout their childhood and adulthood is also very important. So I will say that I, in general, believe and think the evidence supports investing resources into policies that target the early childhood period as well as pregnant women, but I also think that not all is lost. So for any listeners that think about their own life or think about their own pregnancy, let's say, and think, oh wow, I didn't have the most optimal conditions, am I doomed? I hope that the takeaway message is that no, you're not, and that there's a lot of other interventions that can occur and a lot of resilience that we observe.
Your study's based on averages and statistics, aren't they? I mean, that doesn't mean to say that one of those hot kids from Harris County might not turn out to be Bill Gates or Carl Sagan.
Exactly. And also, you should remember that our effects are quite small when we look at the individual level, right? So what we're finding is having one more day of very hot temperatures, so above 32 degrees Celsius or, you know, about 90 degrees Fahrenheit on average. This is mean temperature. This is not the max mean temperature day. Having one more of those during pregnancy reduces annual earnings at age 30 by about $30, right? So $30 on an annual basis is not a very huge amount. So even if you calculate sort of the lifetime earnings loss associated with us, with that, it's still not a very large amount. So our point is not to say that at the individual level, you know, having exposure to extreme heat is really, really bad. You know, in terms of things to worry about during pregnancy in the early childhood stage, extreme heat should not be at the forefront of people's worries. But our point is to say, okay, maybe at an individual level, this effect is not that big. But if we're trying to, again, going back to trying to understand consequences of climate change, well, we have to scale that number up by the number of people who are exposed to these extreme temperatures, how that's going to change by the end of the century. And then, you know, pretty quickly you get actually much bigger numbers.
Maya, does this give a slight advantage to people in cooler states like the Northeast versus those in the U.S. Southwest or the traditional South? Please talk to us about the regional differences emerging out of your study.
Yeah, so I think we have to be careful in terms of drawing conclusions about regional differences. As I said, first of all, our research design is explicitly not comparing across regions, right? We're comparing only within geographic areas, small geographic areas, meaning counties. And one sort of conceptual reason that we actually do that, in addition to trying to better understand the causality, but it's also there's some evidence that suggests that, you know, people can adapt to hot climates. So part of what we're actually identifying is exposure to very unusually hot days, right? So the example that I was sort of bringing up before, well, you know, we're looking at people born in the same county, but one happened to have been in utero during an extreme heat wave and one not, right? So it's not so much that on average in the Northeast temperatures are cooler than in the South, right? But it's about, you know, what's the chance that you are used to or your, you know, people in your locality are used to relatively cool temperatures all the time, and then suddenly you're hit with an extreme heat wave versus you're used to pretty hot temperatures all the time, but you don't really have that many heat waves, right? So it's sort of different questions. A little bit. So I don't think our results can really speak to understanding regional differences in outcomes. I think there's a lot of other factors that account for regional differences that are not related to temperature.
But you mentioned other countries, and I guess this is a human trait, not just a cultural trait. Would I be right in thinking that?
Sure. Yeah. So I mentioned other countries in part to sort of give a framework for thinking about, you know, why it matters whether or not we have access to air conditioning, right, in part to sort of motivate that there's many other countries that actually have a lot of heat waves or a lot of hot days but don't have air conditioning. And there is actually, you know, there is some research that's trying to understand differences across countries in productivity and GDP growth and so on, and trying to relate them to climate. It's, you know, as you can imagine, and as I sort of hinted at in talking about the regional differences, it's really hard to draw those links in a super precise way because, you know, there's just so many differences across countries, right? That it's really hard to isolate, you know, what is happening due to climate or temperature in particular versus all kinds of institutional differences, cultural differences, and so on. And so that's why I'm a little bit hesitant to draw very concrete conclusions about differences across regions. But you know, you could imagine that maybe temperature does play a role in explaining a little bit of the variation across regions in, say, average earnings or average labor market outcomes. We just don't have any very good evidence on that. Yep.
You know, it's interesting. This kind of ties into an interview I did a few weeks ago with Camilo Mora from the University of Hawaii, and he was talking about research into heat deaths and why people die from heat. And he talked about organ damage that could take years or decades to show up later. And that sounds a little bit like what we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think there's this growing interest, and I mean, now for several decades, actually, but into trying to understand kind of latent effects of shocks, of health shocks. And so, you know, in talking about what are the very long-term consequences of exposure to extreme heat in the early life stage, we relate to something called the fetal origins hypothesis, which is this idea that was first put forth by David Barker, a physician in the early 1990s, that suggests that conditions in the very early life period, in utero stage, could have long-term consequences 50, 60, 70 years later that don't actually appear till then. And he was talking about health shocks. He was talking about disease prevalence. You could think about it more broadly in that if there are these latent consequences from health shocks at one point in life that don't appear until much, much later, it can have effects on all kinds of outcomes that are not just health, but also economic productivity, labor market attachment, and so on.
Wow. It seems like this study is part of a whole new range in public health research as the planet warms into more extreme heat waves. Maya, where do you think this can go, and what will you be working on next?
As the planet changes and as research evolves, there's a lot of exciting new research questions that can hopefully be studied with newly emerging data and inform public policy, both in the United States, which is where I'm based, as well as around the world. I'm continuing in the same research area, so I'm working on issues related to other types of public interventions in the early childhood period, so for instance, nurse home visiting programs and access to public preschools. So that's one line of work that I do. In terms of on the environmental side, as I mentioned, I have one study on air pollution that looks at the early childhood exposure in utero as well as first year of life exposure to air pollution. And again, impacts on earnings around age 30. And then I look at other policies that target the same life stage, such as paid family leave in the United States, as well as in other countries as well.
I did an interview about 8 years ago about the impact of pollution on children in the womb, where pregnant mothers wore these backpacks around Harlem, which recorded everything that they were breathing, and were able to show that there was actual changes, I believe, to the DNA from pollution. So that's another huge topic we could talk about maybe another time.
Yeah, no, that's very important and definitely relates to some of my research. That sounds great.
I'll send you a link to that. From the Stanford University School of Medicine, we've been speaking with Dr. Maya Rosten-Slater. She's co-authored a new paper published December 4th, 2017 in PNAS. The title is Relationship Between Season of Birth, Temperature Exposure, and Later Life Well-Being. Find links in my show blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.org. Maya, thank you so much for sharing your time with all of us.
Thank you so much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.